I never wanted to be the brand that tries to make my own sneakers or try and copy or emulate something that other people do. And I've always loved to have the opportunity to work with the best of the best. And what I wanted to do with the collaborations was amplify who my consumer is and what I love about every product. So I love Nike sneakers. Let's work with Nike. You know, I love Rolex watches or good watches. So that's why we did the whole project together with Pro Hunter and designed and built a beautiful Rolex.
Hey everyone, welcome back to What's Ecoming. Today's a journey from Amsterdam to Asia as we chat with Jason Denham, the creator behind Denham. We're exploring the incredible story of his brand and how it conquered the Asian market while staying dedicated to quality. So, Paul, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Martijn.
So, as you know, we've been working with Denham for around 2 years. And it's quite interesting that Denham was one of the early adapters moving from Salesforce to Shopify.
Yeah.
Nowadays, we see more and more merchants who want to make the move from Salesforce to Shopify with their e-commerce platform. Why do you think we see this shift in the market?
Yeah, I think it's like a general trend, of course, what we see. It's not only from Salesforce, but also from Magento and other big platforms. I think most importantly is that it's because Shopify is doing so much innovation at the moment. The last 2 years, 3 years, there has been so many updates, especially for European merchants with Shopify Markets, for example, but also with the enormous update of Shopify POS and now with Shopify B2B, Sections 2.0, Online Store 2.0. It's like there has been so much innovation around Shopify and they're doing a lot of marketing about it. So I think when brands are at a choice for choosing a different e-commerce platform, Shopify is the most obvious one at this day or today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think also what we hear a lot is total cost of ownership.
Yeah, that obviously with Salesforce. Salesforce is really expensive and I think it's quite not transparent how their pricing is.
Yeah, so and that helps with Shopify's clear pricing. You know what you're going to pay also when you're starting to grow.
Yeah, and I think more from a tech side then is that with Shopify, you have the like really well-documented API. So you have the Shopify admin API if you want to extend it with apps and the storefront API. And with Salesforce, for example, Denham was working with the so-called cassettes. It was really hard to maintain and it was really hard to upgrade their system. So with Shopify, it's way more modern.
Yeah, so can you tell a bit more about the migration from Salesforce to Shopify with Denham?
Yeah, it was a super challenging project. It was before Shopify Markets was announced. So we needed to go with the multi-store setup. And based on the requirements of Denham, we decided to do like a MUG approach or a headless setup. And then the design was made by Numbered Agency. Shout out to Martin. I think amazing design, but really challenging to build. A lot of sections, a lot of animations. Because for Denham, it was really important to tell their brand story. So they had quite a simple setup first with the Salesforce setup because the CMS was not that extendable. And now we opted for Contentful as their CMS. So they had a lot of opportunities to do more brand storytelling. So they took that opportunity with the design phase. And then afterwards we needed to develop. So it was a challenging project, but I think a really beautiful project in the end that we're all really proud of here.
Yeah, definitely. One of our main portfolio projects.
Yeah.
Yeah. So looking back at the successful migration from Salesforce to Shopify, what's like the key learning of the project or what people need to take into account when they move from Salesforce to Shopify?
I think the migration from Salesforce to Shopify is relatively straightforward. It's the same for all the migrations that we do. But I think the biggest focus for the brand should be like on the integrations they have. So their integration with the ERP system, overseeing like the whole flow of how an order is being processed. That's, I think, the biggest, not learning, but the biggest takeaway from this project that costs a lot of time. You need to spend a lot of resources and attention to that in the beginning of the project.
Yeah, I agree. Today we got Jason Denham with us, the brain behind Denham Jeans. Together, we're going to talk about the beginning of Denham and highlight some of their big moments over the past 15 years. Hey, welcome to the show, Jason.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, can you give the listener a bit of a backstory about denim and about the inspiration behind the brand?
Sure. So denim brand, I've kind of told this story many times, but the story always comes out the same way, and it's very clear. I think the key part of the story is it's about a passion for jean making. I think that's my calling. That's what I was put on this planet to do. But I started this brand in 2008, and denim brand for me really became my signature brand. So I've kind of worked in the industry all my life. It's been what I've always loved to do. I went to university in England and I studied fashion and business and used those skills to step straight into the denim industry. And did some work for different brands, built a brand called Blue Blood. And then after the brand of Blue Blood, I really had a passion that I wanted to start my own denim brand. And it's funny because I still get stopped by people today. They say, "Oh, your name's Denim." and they think it's a made up name, but it's actually my family name. So maybe that was also my calling, but yeah, I think it was building a brand about a passion for the product and the industry and yeah, my love of jeans was really at the core of what it's all about.
And how does the brand Denim differ from Blue Blood? I think you're a big fan, or you were a big fan of Blue Blood. We still have the helmet here.
We have the helmet. It's on the scooter, so we still wear the helmet of Blue Blood.
That's good to hear. No, but I mean, everything is an evolution. So I'm very proud of the work that I did with Blue Blood, and it was a fabulous brand. It was a very exciting time in the industry. We did some incredible things. We had a fantastic team. And what's nice is a lot of the energy and the passion and the love of Blue Blood kind of evolved into the denim brand. So Blue Blood was my signature. It was my handwriting. It was my design taste, if you like. And denim kind of became the grown-up version of that. So Blue Blood was my first real brand, you know, the first serious brand that I built. And of course, like everything, you make mistakes, you do great things, and you learn a hell of a lot. So the great thing with denim brand is I could take the valuable experience that I got from Blue Blood and use that on the denim brand.
Interesting. And the passion for Japan and Japanese denim, where did that came into the mix of the brand?
Yeah, so I think I just mentioned my design signature and I think you've just hit on it. I think my design signature is very much East meets West. You know, I have a huge passion for denim and everything about it. I love the authenticity of denim and the roots and the heritage and where it all comes from. I think that's very important to understand as a jean maker. However, I really love modernity and pushing things forward and having new ideas and a point of view. So I think I really learned that from Japan. I first went to Japan pretty young. I was around 25, 26. And I don't know if any of you guys in the room have been there or spent time there, but the reaction for me was incredible. I was just like, wow, you know, like yeah. the buzz in everything in Japan really inspired me. And of course I'm a jean maker, so I love the way that they respect and treat and make jeans. That's one thing. But I just fell in love with everything, you know, and it's the presentation in stores. It's the way that people serve you. It's the sentiment of the people. It's the passion for creativity and design. It's the way they love the past, but it's the way they're really excited about the future also. And I think that really resonated with me. And I think Japan has become a massive part of my own kind of design DNA ever since that visit when I was 25, and it's still there today.
Yeah, it's such an amazing country. And what I always like from Japan is that they're able to focus on one thing and try to become the best at what they do. That's probably what you're doing with your jean making.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, when I really first started in design, and that's a great line that you say about one thing. And I got an amazing piece of inspiration once from a guy called Paul Smith, fantastic London designer, one of the great mentors and people who inspired me. And I was very lucky to get a meeting with him at a young age. And one of the things that he said to me was, be the master of one thing before you try and do everything. And that really resonated. And that for me is like, and when he told me that, I was like, okay, my one thing is jeans. I'm going to really get that and focus on that before I do everything. And you're right. I think the Japanese have that mentality too. And Paul Smith is a big, big guy in Japan. That's for sure.
Yeah.
He's done incredibly well there. Yeah.
Nice. And if you look back, it's now just 15 years into the game with denim. What has been your biggest challenge as well as your biggest learning from the past 15 years?
Yeah, it's been an amazing journey, 15 years. It's crazy because we still feel like a very young brand. I think it's part of the sentiment and energy that we always try and keep. I think if you ever get to settled or laid back or comfortable with what you've achieved, then you'll start failing. So we try and keep this kind of, we're still a, not, you know, it's a cliche to say we're a startup mentality, but we really want to have good, raw, young energy and fresh ideas. But to answer your question, there's been incredible milestones all the way along with the brand. We've done so many cool things with engaging with our customers, what we've done with stores, with events, with collaborations, with product storytelling has been, you know, the core of our brand. That's what we're about. I think some of the amazing milestones, opening our first store in Japan in Daikanyama in 2010 was an amazing thing. I started the brand in 2008. I opened the first store on the Prinsengracht in 2009. Beautiful
after,
store.
After some time, you had the full block, I think, on the 9th Street, right?
Yeah. Well, that was also Paul Smith inspired. So I remember when I talked to Paul Smith about how he'd done his thing, I was sitting in his office in Covent Garden in London, and his office was above the store, and he had four or five stores at that time all around his main store. And I remember when I started the denim brand and I started to build this kind of corner and whole community, I remember my wife saying to me, do you realize what you've done? You know, you've kind of created the Paul Smith Floral Street setup. And we had everything. We had a coffee bar, a men's bar, a women's. We had a concept store. And I have a huge passion for retail. I love it. And at that time, I treated it like my showroom. We had the head office on the Prinsengracht around the corner. And I really treated it like this is my opportunity to showcase what we can do as a brand. Since then, we moved the office to the north. I think it's a really cool part of Amsterdam. So then we changed the concept and we moved the stores and started to think, okay, maybe it's better to have stores across the Netherlands instead of having all of them within kind of 500 square meters. We thought maybe it's a good idea to put them in Rotterdam and Maastricht and Utrecht and all the different places, which was probably one of our better ideas.
Nice.
Yeah, because I think the new office is amazing in North.
Yeah, it's great. I love the vibe and the energy over there. I think it's good that we keep fresh and doing different things. But it feels good to be in that location.
Yeah, and so currently you have stores in the Netherlands, Japan and China?
And a few other places as well. Okay. Yeah, but that's the main market. Yeah. Yeah, we have South Africa and we have some things going on in Korea and a few other places. Southeast Asia is a very important territory for us. But the core of our business, the biggest market is Japan. Yeah. We have the most stores in Japan and then followed by China. And of course, the Netherlands is really our core, our anchor, if you like, in Europe.
And can you maybe elaborate a bit on the strategy for that global expansion?
Yeah, so strategy for the brand for me always was East meets West. So I either foolishly or bravely or incredibly inspired figured that the first thing I needed to do with the brand was open my very first store with my very first collection that no one had ever seen in Amsterdam and get started and build a beautiful presence on the Prinsengracht and get people excited. And that worked incredibly well. We had an amazing reaction when we opened the store. People were coming from worldwide to see that store. But I felt really confident on the back of what I'd done with Blue Blood. I knew that I had the products and the tools and the storytelling and the energy and the people to do it. So that worked really well. And then the first thing after that was go to Japan, go to Tokyo and open in Daikanyama. I have to admit, it was a terrible start. It was a complete failure for the first 6 months. Didn't go well at all, partly because of people. I think everything in a company is all about people. So I put an amazing, cool friend of mine, a French guy, in the store in Daikanyama to run that store for me. He was living in Tokyo. This guy's almost Japanese. He's called Stefan. He's a big friend of mine. He's an amazing guy. He still works for the company today. But he was running the store, but it didn't really resonate with the Japanese customers. And then after 6 months, my wife said to me, hey, this isn't working at all. You need to get on a plane, go over there and get that store working. Find out what the hell's going on. We're burning some money over there in Japan. So I did that. I got on the plane. I went to Japan. And freaky story, very lucky, but I got to the store and there was this guy called Aki Nagishi sitting on the doorstep. And he said to me, hey, Jason, come and sit here. And very un-Japanese. I mean, you know, Japanese is normally a lot more quiet and polite. And this guy sat me down on the doorstep of the store and he said, what the fuck are you doing with your store? I was like, excuse my language, but he was swearing at me, and that's very un-Japanese as well. But this guy was sitting there head to toe wearing denim product. You know, he had the jeans on, he had the t-shirts, the product that we were making. We were doing some Converse sneakers at the time, head to toe in it. And I was like, hi, I'm Jason Denham. What's going on here, you know? And he basically said to me that Stefan was a great guy, but he was French. He was more interested in Japanese women than he was the kind of core business of building the brand and telling the story. And he said to me, he said, give me the keys to this store and I will double your business in the next 6 months. I thought, this is great. My wife sent me here. This guy's here. It's like something's been sent to me. And I went, okay, deal. You can take the keys. And I gave him the keys and he didn't double the business. He trebled it.
So.
And all of a sudden, we started flying in Japan. We opened up beautiful department stores in Isetan, which is the best store, one of the best stores in the world. We did incredible stuff with him. And we've gone on today to build an incredible business together. You know, he's now the CEO of my business in Japan. We've opened 30 fabulous stores together, you know, with passion and energy and lots of really good Japanese people working in there. We even hired a few good French people in there too. So it's all worked out very well.
Cool. That's nice. Very exciting. Yeah. Also that how do you say that? Crossing roads with someone like that can bring your brand so much further in a foreign country.
People is just the most important thing, I think, in any company. And I think every industry shares that thought with me. I'm sure it's the same for you guys. But when I started with Aki, I said, look, Aki, we've got three principles. It's people, product, and presentation. I said, if we get that right, everything else will follow. And that was really what we focused on all the time. And we still do that today.
If you look back, is there something what made him successful? What do you think was the decisive factor in that?
I think it was a real good combination. Of course, it's about the person and the spirit and the mentality and of course the taste level. But I think on top of all of that, we really worked hard to understand each other and learn from each other. So I knew that I was bringing Western design, culture, influence, whatever, and bringing that to Japan. And what he did was teach me what the Japanese consumer wants, you know? Yeah. So we worked very close together to deliver the right kind of products that customer was looking for. And I think that's how we just continued and developed. I mean, today it's gone so far that I've set up a whole design team in Japan and we make a special Japan collection. Right. You know, the team are running it and developing it and doing it. And it's part from Aki and I working so close for so long that we've really we've got the same mindset, you know. We know how the brand needs to develop and grow.
Exciting. Sounds good.
Yeah.
And I think how we know denim, or a big part of denim for us, is the collaborations you've done and you still do.
Yeah.
Like Barbour, amazing collaboration.
Yeah.
Timex.
Yeah.
Kaiser recently.
Yeah.
Nike one.
Nike. What is your personal favorite collaboration, and how do you think collaborations in general adds up to the strategy of denim as a brand?
Yeah, it's really interesting because collaborations for me has always been a huge part of our brand. You know, collaborations became a hype and people got really obsessed with, you know, collaborations and of course limited edition releases and all this kind of stuff. But it came about for me because I've always believed, and it goes back a little bit to Paul Smith's words, be the master of one thing before you do everything. So I never wanted to be the brand that tries to make my own sneakers or try and copy or emulate something that other people do. And I've always loved to have the opportunity to work with the best of the best. And what I wanted to do with the collaborations was amplify who my consumer is and what I love about every product. So I love Nike sneakers. Let's work with Nike. You know, I love Rolex watches or good watches. So that's why we did the whole project together with Pro Hunter and designed and built a beautiful Rolex. You know, I was born next to the Barber factory in the north of England, and I've always been a huge fan and respectful that they make one of the most, you know, incredible outerwear rain jackets that there is in the marketplace. So we had a great opportunity to work with them. And I'm a massive fan of street art and generally art and graphic design in general. And we just launched this whole thing, which is House Guest Artist Series. I think we're now up to 25. And I love it because it gives me the chance to connect with artists from very different fields and ideas from different parts of the world. But I love it because we also get the chance to support artists as well. Yeah. I think it's something that you give back. And that's also been fun and a great learning in the whole process. I didn't answer your question, which one was my favorite. In terms of experience, I would say that the Nike collab that we did was an incredible experience because of really learning about other cultures, you know? So I come from the jeanswear culture and there's a big fan base for that. There's denim heads, there's, you know, there's indigo lovers, there's all this kind of stuff. And I've kind of been tunnel vision in that world. When I stepped into the Nike world and when I went to Portland and went to Nike's headquarters, which is ginormous, but still inspiring, which is really impressive. What's great is you go there and you feel the heartbeat and the passion and you go into the secret lab where they have the waffle machine and they create all these incredible things. It's crazy inspiring, you know? But what I learned is that the sneaker community is like way bigger than the jeanswear community. And it taught me a lot of things. So I think the sneaker community was very, very advanced in dropping exclusive products and hyping them. And of course, all of this was through digital channels and how they did it, you know, how they launched things through their websites and the way that their e-com business. But we really got a lot out of that. And I remember when we launched the Air Max One that we did, you know, the site crashed and that was great because that was supposed to happen. You know, all the bots tried to attack us and that was great. And until we did this launch, I didn't know what a bot was, you know. So it was just an incredible learning. And I think the demand and the connection with a whole different consumer base was amazing. It was a huge learning.
Oh, that's cool. And you touched upon it briefly, the Pro Hunter collaboration.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm a watch collector, but I love beautiful watches. And, you know, I think like a pattern piece of a design of a garment, I think it's so intricate the way that you put watches together. And I think for guys, it's like jewelry, you know, it's like try different watches or different jewelry. And I've always loved the GMT Master as a Rolex watch. I think just the size, the proportion, what it is. But to get together with Pro Hunter and to work with them and to put the scissors on the face of the watch and do that was fabulous. You know, it was super cool learning again. And then again, like the sneaker world, I couldn't believe engaging with the watch world, which is even bigger than the sneaker world. Yeah. You know, the number of people that were into that. When we did the watch, we thought, okay, we're doing this really as a little bit of a, you know, it was a little bit of a love project for the brand. I didn't really expect the reaction that it got. And I thought, okay, let's keep this really limited edition. Let's make 21 pieces because we were launching in the year 2021. And we put it out there. And the first day that we launched it, we had 300 requests from the Netherlands and 3,000 requests from China.
Yeah, that's serious stuff.
And it was crazy. And then I won't even say about the Japanese, but it was like, oh my God, this is crazy. And it was a 25,000 euro watch. I mean, this is a serious amount of money, you know? Yeah. Crazy, but very fascinating at the same time.
Yeah, very cool. I really liked it. I was impressed about the design of it, like the matte black and the scissor hands.
Yeah, a lot of beautiful
and
details.
And the blue details.
Yeah.
It was impressive.
Yeah, thank you. A lot of fun to do it.
So I think we've spoken a lot about like physical retail and the importance for denim. How do you see denim's online store and how does it complement the physical retail?
Yeah, so... Like I said, I've always been a retail lover, and with retail we get a great chance to show what we can do and showcase the brand and tell great stories. What I love about the online experience is that the audience is global, which is great, and we're a global brand, more East meets West, and you know we have fans and pockets of business all over the world, so. What's great is that we can share through that. You know, we don't often get the chance. We don't have stores everywhere. So the online experience, of course, is very, very important for the business. I would say we're learning with it every day. You know, I think if I'm really honest, I was late to the game in that. And I think it's something that we're picking up and through experience, we're getting better and better at it every day. But what's great about it is that you can constantly feed it and you can constantly fill it with new content and get people excited about it. And I think, of course, through our social channels and through what we're doing online, then we're engaging with a bigger audience. And of course, it links together with the retail and hopefully draws more people back to the stores and brings the footfall back to the stores.
You've been talking a lot about, let's say, Europe or the Netherlands, China and Japan. I was wondering, what's your vision on the US market, or is there a reason why the US market is not a top priority?
Yeah, good question. So I mentioned earlier that Blue Blood, I learned a lot of good things for the future and a lot of things that maybe we shouldn't do in the future. When I started Blue Blood, we went to the US, we went to a show, we got an agent, we did the most incredible successful show in New York. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, we've made it. This is unbelievable. We wrote orders left, right, and center. The agent thought we were the greatest thing in the world. I was got on the plane to come back and I just couldn't believe our success. And then got back home, started producing these orders, started planning everything, and then just ran into the biggest nightmare of no payments, people not respecting what the orders were, agents going AWOL. It was an absolute shit show from the beginning to the end about the US. So I thought, okay, here's a learning. You know, maybe I jumped in too quickly with 2 feet. Often I'm very excited for it. I do that. I mean, that's part of my nature. But then the more I studied the US and the more I learned about the market, I realized that it's actually a very difficult market and a challenging market. And what I realized is my way of doing business where I've been very, very successful is about people. And of course, I told you the story about sitting on the doorstep of my store in Japan with Aki and bonding and getting a great relationship with him and building that market and building a company together. You know, we have a great company in Japan with a team of staff and it works fantastic. I have the same thing in China. And I think the only way that I can really do America with the respect that it deserves is go and find my Aki in America. And I haven't found him yet. I do keep asking Aki if he's got an American brother somewhere, but I'm kind of still searching, and I'm hoping that one day I'm going to meet this guy and we're going to learn from each other. So like I said, the brand is still young. We've got time. I would love to do something. I mean, what I have done is sell in the best stores in the US, you know, and we went there and I did it personally and I met with Barney's and sold to those guys and then they went bankrupt. And so you've got to, you know, we sell in an amazing store in LA called American Rag. So we're in some pockets of good distribution. But I would love to go there and open stores and tell our story, set up an online channel over there and, you know, really give it the justice that it deserves.
Yeah. And if you look at the main opportunities for growth for the brand, where would you see that if we look at the global scale? Is that US or would you say, for example, China? There's a that's obviously probably the biggest market out there.
I mean, I think you just answered the question, but basically we see the Americas as virgin territory, and I think that's an incredible opportunity for the future. And I'm kind of really happy to keep it that way for now, you know. And I really want to focus on the strengths. So. Of course, Japan is doing incredible, healthy, steady growth year on year, and we'll keep going with that. So I'm opening two new stores in November. We're opening a new one in Japan. We're opening a new one in China in November as well. So Asia, of course, is a big focus. And then we're looking to open a new one in Hong Kong next year. So that's something that we're scouting and looking at now. But the big potential growth is definitely China. You know, I think I did an incredible tour of China. I ran around for 4 or 5 days and jumped on a plane every day and went to Chengdu and Shanghai and Beijing and really looked at the stores that we have, which are great. We've got a great team. We have this fantastic guy called Bison who's running that operation over there. And he's really working very close together with Aki and myself, because we're bringing that whole Japanese, British, Dutch, European kind of taste level on what we're doing. And he's really putting that there. The positioning that we have in China is insane. You know, we sit next to Dover Street Market or very high level denim brands like 45 RPM or cool kind of stuff. I mean, it's great. So we're really in the right kind of setup, ready to go. And I have a strong partner also in China who can help me to really grow the business. There's great local knowledge and power there. So we definitely, in our business plan, that's going to be one of the big pushes in the coming years.
Yeah, especially if you want to go to China, I think it's relatively hard to set your first feet on the ground.
But definitely.
It seems like you already have the proper foundation there.
Yeah, I think honestly, that's the only way. I wouldn't risk that any other way.
And are there any other interesting passion projects where you're working on which you can already share a bit about?
Yeah, there are incredible, exciting, really some of the most exciting projects coming up. And unfortunately, I can't talk about it yet. So we're going to have to come and do this again. And we're going to have to do a whole podcast on this because it's going to take me half an hour to talk about it. But we are currently working on what I believe is the most exciting and the biggest kind of the most important project I've ever done in the Netherlands. So it's something amazing. It's something fabulous. I've had a whole team working on it. I've brought in new design talent who are based in London to come and help me put this whole thing together. It's kind of a collaboration of sorts, but super exciting. It's a big thing that's coming up. And you'll be the first to know, and we'll do a whole new podcast just on that project.
Great.
Thanks a lot, Jason. It was very inspiring. Great to hear and cool.
Thank you.
Cool to see you. Good luck.
Thanks a lot. We'll speak soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
We're super proud that our podcast is sponsored by Shopify. You probably know by now that we're big fans. We have been a Shopify Plus partner for over 5 years, and it's simply the best, most forward-thinking e-commerce platform in the world. And with every episode of the series of What's Ecoming, we're giving away a free Shopify consultation. If you have a Shopify store and you want expert tips on how to improve and optimize your store, please go to podcast.askphil.com and fill in your email address. Our expert team of Shopify consultants will sit down with you for 30 minutes, giving you great insights into making the best from your store. Once again, go to podcast.askphil.com. Fill in your email address and we'll get in touch with the lucky winner. Good luck. So thanks for listening today. Please like and subscribe to our podcast channel in your favorite podcast app. See you next time.